Science and technology are an increasingly large part of our lives. We take a look at the interface between science and history, economics, philosophy, ethics, religion, and culture. That's Spark Dialogue Podcast, where it all comes together. I'm your host, Elizabeth Fernandez. In the cold, desolate, and icy Canadian Arctic, something unique lies beneath the ice. Far beneath the temperature where water normally freezes lies two subsurface lakes. These lakes, cut off from the rest of the environment for thousands of years, could offer a peek into understanding life in strange, isolated conditions, and could also be a parallel for subsurface lakes on the cold, icy moons within our solar system. Joining us today is Anja Rutishauser, who discovered these lakes. Anja is a PhD candidate at the University of Alberta, where she uses geophysical measurements to study glaciers and ice caps in the Canadian Arctic. So welcome to the podcast, Anja.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me.
You discovered these lakes a little bit by accident. So how does one go about discovering a lake that's underground by accident?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, well, we certainly did not look for subglacial lakes or any liquid water there because, as you said, it is cold temperatures. So the Devon ice cap where those lakes are located is thought to be cold-based with ice frozen to the ground. So any liquid freshwater would just freeze on. So we didn't think that there would be any lakes there. I was analyzing ice penetrating radar data to characterize the subglacial bedrock conditions, including the subglacial hydrological conditions under Devon ice cap. But I expected to find maybe subglacial water in those fast flowing marine terminating outlet glaciers. And certainly not in this cold-based center of Devon ice cap. And so when the radar data then showed typical signatures that indicate subglacial lakes, that was a complete surprise. First we were really puzzled about this, and because we had to ask ourselves the question, how is it possible to have liquid water at these cold temperatures there? And so then we started looking into the possibility that those lakes could be salty, where salt depresses the freezing point of water, allowing these lakes to sustain liquid even at those cold temperatures. So basically, we found these lakes by accident while studying radio echosounding measurements.
You're looking at the radar that's going underneath the ice?
So the radar measurements are basically taken from airborne surveys. So radar antennas are put on the wings on a plane, and okay. Then we just fly over the ice caps. And so radar data are generally used to derive the ice thickness and properties and the shape of the bedrock under the ice. But radio echosounding is also a very common and reliable tool to identify subglacial water. So basically how it works, radar antennas emit electromagnetic waves, which then are transmitted through the ice and reflect at any contrast in the material properties. So they reflect at the contrast of ice and underlying bedrock. And so as soon as there is water present underneath the ice, the radar signal has a very different characteristic from when there is no water present.
So your signal that you get from the radar is different whether there is just all ice or also has water or also is just rock underneath the ice.
Yeah, so the signal is very different if there is water present or if it's basically dry and frozen.
Okay, so does your radar signal tell you how deep these lakes are?
Unfortunately not. So the radar doesn't travel through water. It only bounces back at the top surface of the water. So we actually don't know how deep those lakes are right now.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that these lakes are really salty, and that's why they can be so cold, because salt changes the temperature that water can freeze at. So where is this salt coming from?
Yeah, so we found evidence in the surrounding geology that there are salt-bearing rocks that might outcrop underneath those lakes, underneath Devon ice cap. And we believe that the salinity or the salt in the water comes from those salty rocks. However, we don't really know right now how those lakes are generated, if they are generated directly from the interaction of the ice on top of those salty rocks, kind of like when we salt the roads on the streets in the winter and then the ice melts, or if they were maybe formed at an interglacial time or when there was no ice, if there were lakes already and then eventually covered by ice and then became increasingly saltier from the interaction with those underlying salty rocks.
Okay. So if you wanted to go about exploring these lakes, could you drill down to them?
Yes. So, of course, we would like to drill into those lakes because we want to figure out what's in those lakes and how salty is it? What's the microbiology? Is there life in there? Drilling into such lakes is quite the undertaking because it's not that easy because the water that's in the lakes is under quite a high pressure. So pressure also reduces the pressure melting point of ice. So as soon as we would drill a hole into those lakes and the water comes in contact with the atmosphere, it could be that the drilling equipment would freeze on right away because the water is not under pressure now anymore. And also because the water is so salty, this could be a challenge to such drilling exercises as well. And again, there might be a slushy part on top of it. So I think drilling into or through such a slushy area would be quite challenging.
How deep underground are the lakes?
Yeah, so they are covered by about 550 to 750 meters of ice.
Okay. So that would be a long way to drill down if you had to do that anyways.
Yeah, that would be quite the way to drill. However, it has been done at Lake Willems in Antarctica before, where they drilled underneath, I think, 800 meters of ice.
Oh, wow. Okay. These lakes are pretty unique. So I know that there are some other underground lakes, like in Greenland and Antarctica, but what makes these lakes so different than the ones that have been discovered already?
Well, so first of all, those are the first one that have been discovered in the Canadian Arctic. So like you said, there are some in Greenland and Antarctica, but we had no idea that there would be lakes in the Canadian Arctic as well. And then secondly, I guess they're pretty unique because they consist of hypersaline water, which is about 4 to 5 times the salinity of seawater. And the lakes exist at these extremely cold temperatures. So there are over 400 subglacial lakes that have been identified underneath the Antarctic ice sheet and a few underneath the Greenland ice sheet. But all these lakes are considered to contain fresh water with temperatures at the pressure melting point. So the pressure melting point can be reached from a combination of relatively high geothermal heat flux, so heating from the bottom underneath the ice, and the insulation of a relatively thick ice sheet on top that is shielding from those cold surface temperatures. So all those lakes in Antarctica and Greenland contain fresh water at around 0 degrees, where the Devon lakes contain hypersaline water at water temperatures below about minus 10 to minus 12 degrees Celsius.
One interesting thing to find out about these lakes, if there is life in these lakes. So I suppose there's no way right now to know if there is life without actually, you know, drilling down and going to see yourself, right?
Right. So at this point, we don't know. So other subglacial aquatic environments have been shown to host microbial life despite their isolation from the atmosphere and their extreme dark and cold conditions. So from that, we could say that the Devon subglacial lakes have quite the potential to host a unique ecosystem that could support microbial life.
Okay, so there are life in these other underground lakes, but I guess the difference in this one is that it's in this very salty environment?
Yeah, so it's salty. So there is one other subglacial water system that is salty, and it is a brine underneath Taylor Glacier in Antarctica.
Okay.
It's also known as Blood Falls. And the difference is that this brine is connected to a groundwater system, which is sourced by an ancient pool of marine water that has been isolated from uplift in the area. So the Devon Lakes are probably a little bit more isolated spatially because they're not connected to any ancient marine brine, but rather sourced or the salt rather comes from those underlying salty rocks. So the system is different, but however, there have been researchers that sampled the water from underneath the Taylor brine, and they have found active microbial communities in there. So this research shows that despite the salinity and those cold temperatures, subglacial water systems can have active microbial life.
Okay, so it's not ridiculous to think that there might be life deep down in this lake.
It's definitely not ridiculous to think that, yeah. So I believe that so far that everywhere we looked where there is water underneath glaciers, there was actually life associated with it as well.
Since these lakes are so deep and under so much ice, I mean, they essentially are completely cut off from the sun.
Yeah, so there is no sunlight that would go through the ice. And it's for life, that is pretty extreme because normally life gains their energy from the sun and through photosynthesis.
Right.
And so those microbial communities in subglacial aquatic environments have shown that they gain their energy from chemical reactions with rock compounds, basically. Mm. So they also don't need organic compounds. So there have been organisms found that can actually gain energy from inorganic sources such as nitrogen, iron, or sulfur compounds.
Is this similar to what's going on deep in the ocean, these life communities that are around these volcanic vents? Is this sort of like similar to where they're getting their energy from?
I'm not sure how those vents work in the ocean, but I could see that there's also no sunlight at these vents. So I could also see that life or microbial life at those vents in the ocean or deep in the ocean would also gain their energy from some chemical reactions and not from sunlight.
Another interesting thing about these subglacial lakes is that since they are so deep and they're essentially isolated from the rest of the world and they're isolated from the atmosphere, how long have they been in isolation?
Yeah, so we believe that they are isolated for a minimum of 120,000 years. There's some evidence that 120,000 years ago, Devon Ice Cap may have been ice-free, but there's no hard evidence for this. So we actually don't know if it maybe survived this interglacial period and was actually isolated for a longer time than that. But we would say a minimum of 120,000 years.
So we had talked about the potential of drilling down to these lakes and seeing what's down there. And you mentioned some of the problems of drilling. I guess another thing we'd have to worry about is that since there could be life in these lakes, that we don't know what the characteristics are. And we also want to make sure that we don't contaminate these lakes for the safety of the lakes, but also so that we know that any life we find is actually in the lake before we drill down there and not from our own drilling probes. So we have to worry about contamination. And I know that this is something that we worry about when we send a probe to another planet. For example, the Juno space mission, they had to worry about any cross-contamination on the probe from Earth that could potentially land on one of the moons of Jupiter and contaminate the moon because there might be some biosphere there. So they're actually going to end the mission by crashing into Jupiter where there's less potential for life. So do you have to take similar precautions when you're drilling down to the lakes to avoid some cross-contamination?
Yes, definitely. Because as you said, we really don't want any contamination with this ecosystem. And also we want to measure only what's down there and not anything that we might have introduced from the surface. So I think when they drilled into Lake Willens in Antarctica, that was, I believe, in 2013, they also took these precautions of having a clean and sterile drilling equipment. I think they used UV radiation treatment for all their equipment and everything that went down into the borehole, their sample probes and everything to avoid any contamination.
These subsurface lakes might be a parallel for other underground lakes that are in our solar system. Do you know what some of the places are that we might find a lake like this?
I'm the most familiar with Europa, one of Jupiter's icy moons. Mm-hmm. So those Devon subglacial lakes could be good terrestrial analogs for kind of lakes in the ice shell of Europa. So Europa is one of Jupiter's icy moons that has a solid rock core a global ocean, which is then covered by a global ice shell. Okay. And so a recent study showed that there could be lakes or water pockets within this global ice shell near the surface. So it would be kind of similar conditions, like on the Devon subglacial lakes, it would be hypersaline water or quite salty water underneath an ice shell. So that's why we mentioned that this study would be a good analog for Europa. But I also think that there might be hypersaline water underneath one of the Martian polar ice caps.
How do they know that the water under the surface of Europa might also be salty?
So I think that the theory is that some water from the global ocean would separate and kind of form a plume and would go upwards into the ice shell because it's just a little bit warmer. And as it travels upwards in the ice shell, the fresh water would start freezing out, leaving more salty and saltier water okay. in the ice shell behind while it's traveling upwards towards the surface.
Okay, so the analog we're looking at isn't the global ocean under Europa, but it's actually these pockets of water. It's more like a lake.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. I mean, it might be, I don't think we know how salty the Europa ocean is or what exactly it consists of. So it might be an analog for both of those, for those lakes okay. in the ice shell and for the ocean underneath.
Okay. Do you know how deep these lakes are or the global ocean on Europa is?
I don't know how deep the global ocean is. I think the ice shell is somewhat between 15 and 25 kilometers thick, but that's like a pretty wide range where it could be anywhere between that.
But still, it's much thicker than what we're dealing with in the Canadian Arctic.
Exactly. But if those lakes in the ice shell in Europa would be much closer to the surface, so it might be less deep than that.
Okay. So if we were to find life underneath the ice shelf in Canada, could this help us to potentially understand how life would develop in a place like Europa?
Yeah. So that's why we think it's such a good analog, because anything that we can find out about life in those subglacial lakes on Earth, like how life evolves in this isolation, in these extreme conditions, how we can survive, can give us hints to possibilities and the limitations of life in similar conditions on other planetary bodies like on Europa.
And would they also help us to maybe develop an exploration strategy? So if we were to send a probe to Europa one day, could we use like what we learned by exploring these Canadian lakes on Europa as well?
Maybe we could use the subglacial lakes on Earth to develop sampling strategies. So if we eventually can send a probe up to Europa that can land on the ice and drill into these lakes in the Europa ice shell. Maybe we need to know kind of what to expect there, how to sample the water there. So we could use the subglacial lakes on Earth to kind of test equipment for that.
Yeah, and I suppose that you might be dealing with some of the same problems. I mean, obviously, you have to drill down a lot deeper on a place like Europa, but you might have to deal with still you mentioned the hypersalinity or pressure as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and like it might be also really cold in those hypersaline waters on Europa as well. Yeah.
And one thing that's interesting about these lakes in general, whether they be on Europa or in Canada, is that it might give us more of an idea of what life is to begin with and where it came from to understand life in extreme environments like this.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why technically, or we always say that all the subglacial lakes on Earth represent good terrestrial analogs for studying life on other planetary bodies. Yes. The drilling is for sure our long-term vision because we want to know if there's life in there. But this would be quite a long-term project. So for now, we actually plan a more detailed airborne geophysical survey over those lakes and the surrounding area starting in mid-May. So we are super excited to have the chance and go back and research those lakes.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast then.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Elizabeth Fernandez for Spark Dialogue Podcast. Do you want to live forever? Join us again in 2 weeks when we discuss how science may provide us with a fountain of youth. You can learn more about this podcast series on sparkdialogue.com or on social media on facebook.com/sparkdialogue or on Twitter @sparkdialogue. And we also appreciate a rating or a review that you happen to send our way. You can also learn how to subscribe to this podcast on our website. This is Elizabeth Fernandez, and thanks for listening.